This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon on today's special roundtable. Detroit got its nickname from the industry that was born here and has shaped the city for centuries. Automobiles are the lifeline of much of America and the bedrock of Motown's economy. But in recent years, the auto industry has faced many challenges, from high costs at home to competition from abroad. It's also been an industry that has given opportunity to many African Americans. Joining me today, top executives from the Big Three will discuss what's ahead for America's car companies. Rod Gillum, Vice President of Corporate Responsibility and Diversity of General Motors, is here. From Chrysler, Daimler Chrysler, Frank Fountain, Senior Vice President, Government Affairs, and Daryl Hazel, Ford Motor Company Senior Vice President and President, Ford Customer Service Division. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. Greatly appreciate it. Mr. Gillum, let me start with you. The idea that the auto industry of 25 years ago is completely different than the automobile industry we know today. When you look at the challenges you face, how realistic is it to believe that we're going to see the kind of muscle that we saw in its heyday?
Well, I think if you look back, you would expect this to change. We have a lot more competitors than we had before. They're much better. There are several new entries into the market coming every single year. I think that if you look at General Motors, and we'll be celebrating 100 years of existence in a couple of years, I think we have a proud, rich tradition. We do plan on being around, Ed. I think contrary to some people who believe that GM no longer has the halo that it had at one time, we continue to grow as a company globally. We clearly have issues here in North America, but those are product-driven. And we think that we've got the right team in place and the right products in place to turn that all around.
Is it hard for you to believe that we'd be talking about GM in the tenuous economic terms we are? Had you said that 25 years ago, I don't think anyone would have believed it.
Well, 25, 30 years ago, the government was looking to break General Motors up because of antitrust concerns and we were too large. Quite frankly, looking back, that would be a great problem to have today. But I think clearly from our perspective, with the number of new entries into the market, there's just no way that one company can preserve that share of dominance in the marketplace. Competition has made us a better company as well. We think the offerings today are much more exciting and much more diverse than they used to be. We understand the importance of quality. And on all of all barometers, all the external indexes, J.D. Powers and others, GM is right there at the one or two position.
Daryl Hazel, let me turn my attention to you. Ford Motor Company, over the course of the last couple of weeks, announcing more job cuts, people concerned, particularly in these regions, about just sustaining a lifestyle. We heard from President Bush, I asked this of the mayor, I ask it of you, you think it's realistic that car companies, the U.S. Big Three, can survive without federal help?
Oh, I certainly think that we won't only survive, we'll prosper. Even in today's environment, the car business is an integral part of anyone's economy. Any emerging country, one of the first things they do is try to establish their own car industry. And, of course, where do they want to sell those cars? Right here. Why? Because it's the most profitable market in the world to be in. And as the home team, yes, we have to do some things to effectively compete across the globe, but this still remains the largest market, and we certainly intend to get our unfair share of it.
Frank Fountain, how much is it fair to criticize the car companies and say that the Big Three got fat, they got egotistical, they never believed that they would have to be in real competition with anyone other than the other two?
Well, fairness is a
relative term.
Relative term.
We'll take that.
I think that the automobile industry has gone through cycles, just like the banking industry, the textile industry, and many other industries. It's a dynamic world. It's a global economy. And there's global competition. And so I think the auto industry isn't just the facilities and the headquarters here in Detroit. The auto industry has a presence in almost every state and city in this country. and is a major part of the fabric of the economies throughout the U.S. And I think the auto industry and its contribution to this country's economy is very much misunderstood, especially when it compares to foreign facilities in this country.
Do you want to say, you want to follow
no,
up?
No, and I think that the number of jobs that just one of the three companies provide is greater than the sum of all of the jobs provided by whether it's the Japanese or the other auto companies.
Rod Gillum, isn't that the key, though, particularly for African Americans? I sit here with three black males who are high executives in these corporations. The auto industry has provided great opportunity for African Americans. If we all concede that we're going to have to see leaner companies, that's going to mean downsizing these companies where even if you get back to full strength, you're probably not going to be able to employ the people that you let go number to number. That being said, how should African Americans look at this?
You know, I think that it concerns me personally. My father came from the South to the North to work in the assembly plant. Spent 27 years and retired from there. And today I'm a vice president at General Motors. So clearly my family's success has been by virtue of the contribution of the auto industry. I think that what we've got to focus on is how to turn the business around to grow market share, to let us continue to be able to contribute to those communities as we have in the past. It pains me to see some of the urban settings where we have to end up closing facilities. And those are the facilities where you have a number of African-American employees. And as a result of losing that market share to the imports primarily, it has a tremendous impact on that whole local economy. I would love to be in a situation where we could increase the number of minority suppliers. Today we have about $4.3 billion, that's with a B, in components that go to minority suppliers. If GM reduces, then that impacts those suppliers and in turn impacts their communities as well. So our desire is to turn the cycle around, increase our market share, therefore increase opportunities for employment, increase opportunities for suppliers and dealers as well.
Frank Fountain, this is a huge problem, though. I don't know that America and perhaps even the auto industries have grappled with all of the challenges they face or even have a game plan fully to try to shore up the land that we've stood on. Are you concerned that in terms of just African Americans again, we may see in downsizing some of those in the corporate suites go away and not be able to really bring the concerns of black America to the table when you talk about reshaping this industry?
Well, I think the African-American presence in the auto industry has been significant for many, many decades, and I don't see that changing. I think the industry will obviously become more efficient, which means fewer employees to produce vehicles on the one hand. On the other hand, I think the auto industry leads almost all other industries in this country in employment of African Americans, in providing and the purchase of goods and services from African American businesses. I think we've been leaders in that. I think that that the industry has, that African Americans and their presence in the industry will continue to grow, I think, notwithstanding the downsizing. And Daimler Chrysler, over the last 10 to 12 years, has invested $6 billion in new facilities in the city of Detroit, new engine plants, new assembly plant, and that is in the heart of where African Americans live and work.
Daryl Hazel, what do you tell a guy that worked at a plant that made $12, $15 overtime, was able to buy a home, was able to send his kid to college, was able to eke out an existence, and in the best of times live a true middle-class existence in America? What do you tell him that he's not going to possibly be able to tell his kid who may not want to go to college, you too can have the same life?
Well, this is not a phenomenon that is only in the auto industry. And I would just say that as a big supporter of education, the notion that you may not want to go to college, it's true, there are a lot of people who don't, but as the global economy is moving, everybody is focusing more on education. So I would say that that guy who was working in a plant, first off, he wasn't making 12 to 15. He was making considerably more than that. And it did create a strong, vibrant middle class. In fact, America is still the only economy that is truly driven by its middle class. And we just have to adapt. Just because the solution may not be crystal clear, it doesn't mean there isn't a viable one out there. I'd also like to say, relative to your earlier point about the role and influence of African Americans, I see it continuing to increase. What you're seeing now is more African Americans involved in the design of vehicles. Why? Because African American culture is one of the leading cultures of our society, and you're going to see more of that, not less.
Frank, can you suggest that that's going to be the case when, for instance, Chrysler is now Daimler Chrysler? There are those who will say that it's not fully part of the Big Three in the sense of the American Big Three anymore. Is that the wave of the future? And are we going to see that kind of influence, a European influence? And what will that do? There are different sensibilities, as we know, that come to the table when someone else is in play.
Well, I think, Ed, the merger between Daimler-Benz and Chrysler Corporation has proven to be a successful merger. I think its impact on African Americans within the company and other minorities has been a positive one. I think that the German American mixture of cultures within the company has also proven to be a successful undertaking. And as a result of that, we have continued to promote African Americans within the Chrysler group, and every other metric that one would look at to see what has happened over the last 5 years since the merger would be a positive.
As General Motors moves to morph itself into whatever it's going to become in terms of a corporation, Rod, I know that you've heard this. There are those, the blue-collar worker, who says the execs in the ivory tower don't get it, and they don't understand that it's not going to come back. You're painting too rosy of a picture, and we're just out of luck. We're going to have to take our behinds to Walmart, no benefits, and hope that we can survive. What do you tell that guy?
I think it's a very difficult message. The reality is that in certain parts of the world, we clearly are getting smaller. And the solution, of course, is having the right products, having the right management team in place, having the right technologies. And, you know, no one wants to downsize. And I think it's something that hurts all of us, quite frankly. For that blue-collar worker, I would ask him or her to hold on. You know, Daryl mentioned that there are certain cycles in this business. We're at a low spot right now, and we think that we've turned the corner. You look at the market share increase in just the month of January, we were up 6%. So we feel very optimistic about the future. We've launched some new products, which we think are the best in the class. We have 20 products that have more than 20 miles per gallon. Most people don't know about that, so we need to do a better job of telling that story.
Daryl, can you compete with foreign competition? We know through the years there was question about whether or not there was an equal playing field for the American car companies. Where you stand today, can you actually step in the ring and go toe-to-toe now?
Well, that's what this whole thing has been all about. As I said earlier, the domestic industry here in the United States is still the one everyone aspires to enter, and I don't know how many people truly understand that particularly the traditional domestic three are the ones that fund the pensions, are the one that fund the health care, are the ones that supply a lot of capital to various charities throughout America. And I don't think that the consumer wants to make a choice based on that. So it does come down to the product, but there is no reason why we can't get the product to where we want it to be. And we're all working very hard to do just that.
Frank Fountain, is the president realistic in saying don't look to us for help? Because as Daryl Hazel just suggested, when you look at the tentacles that the automobile industry has in the U.S. economy, it would be hard to fathom the U.S. economy staying strong without a strong presence.
Well, I certainly think that the president has not fully appreciated the important contribution that the auto industry is making in this country. And as with the governments around the world, whether it's Japan or China or the European governments, they are all supportive of their respective industries. And as a matter of fact, there are currency issues between the U.S. and the Japanese, which unlevels the playing field. And our U.S. government sits by idly watching this happen to us and without really trying to help us level that playing field. We've had that struggle for many, many decades through many administrations. So I think the president is not right in his assessment of where we are.
All right. Well, it's the industry that made this city great, and many say that made the country great. Rod Gillum of GM, Frank Fountain of Daimler Chrysler, and Daryl Hazel of the Ford Motor Company. I thank you all for joining us today. Greatly appreciate it, gentlemen.
You.